Welcome to the Cerebral Mind Control Podcast. You're listening to episode number 52 with Chris Jarvis. Now, in this episode, we get to speak and learn from Chris Jarvis, who is a carpenter, contractor, rapper, entrepreneur, artist, and radio host here in Saskatoon. He has an amazing story, and you guys are going to learn a ton. I know I say that every single time, but it's so true, and I can't wait for you to learn what I learned. Now, this episode is brought to you by Enigma Talent and Entertainment, Canada's one-stop shop for premium corporate quality entertainment services, ranging from hypnosis to magic, mentalism, photography, videography, photo booths, and DJs. You name it, and we got it in entertainment services. Now, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you Chris Jarvis.
What's up?
Not much, man.
How's it going, man?
Good. Busy.
Nice.
Always running, it seems like, lately these days, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has.
We've seen each other.
Well, I've seen you a lot on social media and Facebook and stuff like that. Your videos are awesome.
Thank you.
I keep in, like, seeing you on Snapchat and, like, doing your tricks and stuff on there is, like, kept me in line with kind of, like, what you're doing, which is pretty cool. But, nice. Yeah, in person, it's been probably, well, I don't even know the last time we ran into each other.
Yeah. Might have been the scratch days.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it was that long ago, but.
Yeah.
Nice, man. Well, first off, thanks very much for coming out.
No problem. I really appreciate it. Yeah, this is good. I've been looking forward to it, and I really appreciate you asking me, to be honest. Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, well, I guess, you know, I want to learn from the guests that come on here. So.
I'll try my best.
For those that don't know you, just maybe give us a little rundown of your background.
Well, now I'm a carpenter, and I'm my main job, I guess, is a general contractor carpenter, and we do a number of different things. I mostly renovations, developments, some custom carpentry stuff, all over the map. I don't really like to stick to one area.
Okay.
Try to, like, you know, keep myself entertained and interested in everything I'm doing. Before that, I worked in the finance industry. I decided that wasn't for me after about 2 years and got out of that after finishing my university degree a long time ago.
Now, if I can just interrupt for a second.
Yeah.
Your carpentry.
Yeah.
I've been watching your work on social media, and man, my favorite one is that really long, I don't even know what you would call it, but it's like a display unit that goes underneath the TV. I think it was in Chad's room.
We built Chad Reynolds. He was a guest on your podcast a while ago, I remember. He had been wanting a custom credenza, was what I think we settled on the name. It's credenza could be a couple different things, I guess, in the carpentry world. But what we did was kind of built a TV stand about 7 feet long out of walnut and a couple custom things, designed it with what Chad wanted in mind, and kind of came up with some drawings and some, like, ideas of what he'd like, and then it seriously took us a year to finish it.
Oh, yeah.
it was probably the most complicated piece I'd built so far. It was worth it. Yeah, I'm really happy with how it turned out, and all the learning involved in it and kind of trying new things is what I was really happy about. Learned a bunch of different things about finishing, and I'm glad he's patient, because most people wouldn't be happy with a year lead time on a project. But at the same time, the problem with my carpentry is I'm never happy with it.
Okay.
So I'm always kind of tweaking it. And if something's not going right, then I slow down and I stop to think about what we're doing. And then, you know, it might be a couple weeks until we get to that point where I'm ready to tackle that issue or problem again. So, yeah, that was it's a great project, and I'm kind of, from that idea, I'm going to probably building two or three, not like that, but similar styles to what we did there. So,
yeah, it was really nice. I liked it a lot.
And yeah.
Could tell a lot of work went into it, too. Yeah. So,
hours. Yeah,
I guess, sorry for interrupting there.
No worries. I guess on top of running a business with my business partner, Mark, I also host Third Verse, a hip hop and rap radio show on CFCR every Wednesday night.
Nice.
With Chaps and Rewind.
Okay.
A couple of guys that I came up, well, I didn't come up in the rap scene with in my younger days. Chaps is a bit older than me, and Kent is about to, or Rewind is the same age as me. But I've known them for close to 12, 13 years now. And as an extension of that, Chaps and I have started recording a podcast series that we're just getting off the ground, hopefully within the next week or two, called Third Verse Extra. And we will be interviewing rap and hip hop luminaries from across Canada and maybe a bit beyond, maybe to the States, and who knows. But right now we've got a list of probably 20 to 30 people that we're pretty sure we could hit up and have a good conversation with.
Nice.
So we're not looking too far past that. Doing kind of a combination marketing push with Uggs Mag on that one, which nice. Is again another kind of underground hip hop online magazine that a friend of ours runs from Austin, Texas. So it's kind of okay.
It's a good way to start it off.
Yeah, yeah, we've got some good solid backing and some good support is the biggest thing for us. So,
sweet.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've thought that out then.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it's not all me, but definitely Chaps has been helping a lot with like figuring out the details and the partnership thing, because he's been good friends with Noise, who runs Uggs Mag for, well, they grew up together, so they've been friends for 30 years now. So
Very cool. It's all about the people you know, right?
Yes, exactly. That's what more and more I'm learning every year.
So radio and a podcast.
Yes.
Cool. So you're diversifying, and
yeah.
Is there a reason that you're not doing the podcast on the radio? Or?
Well, there's a few different reasons why we don't podcast the radio show. One is that the governing body that looks after royalties for music. One of them is that it gets kind of sticky when you podcast and you have a bunch of different music on there, because that's the body I'm thinking about, can't okay. tell how many times the podcast has been downloaded, so then they can't tell how much royalties they should be paying out to.
So
every time it's right. listened to or played live, it needs to be credited to the artist if they're
right.
you know.
Okay.
And not all of the music that we do is heavily, you know, for the most part it's not really heavily monitored music, but at the same time we're trying to support the artists that we enjoy and that we play on the radio station, because a lot of it is mostly underground and not hard to find, but not something that you'd normally hear on, you know, 96.3 or whatever.
Yeah.
Obviously it's a community radio station. The other thing is that the studio there is kind of really not set up to do live recordings. And so in the past we've had to, when we do interviews, they've been phone interviews, and they can be done in a different studio, but then you have to record and put them online. And we find a lot of the times, if we do an interview, it ends up lasting 45 to an hour, and that takes up 2/3 of our show every week. So
okay.
Chaps and I kind of talked, and we elected that, well, I've been wanting to start a podcast and have more in-depth conversations with people for a long time, kind of on a different variety of subjects. But
yeah,
we found that, again, if... we're friends with a lot of the people that we're interviewing, either myself or Chaps or both of us, or, you know, we know the people. So the conversations we end up having are sometimes, the last one we had with Yai from Winnipeg ended up being an hour and 15 minutes. So we would have, if we put that on the air, we would have had
right.
no time for any music or discussion about, you know, makes the scene sense. Or shows that are coming up. Okay. So, and the other thing is, we've been also thinking about, like, there's a few different things going on in the hip hop scene at large that we feel we could fit in and really help a lot of Canadian artists, you know, get more exposure and get out there. Most, like, I don't know if anybody follows it, but Underground Hip Hop was a website that sold mainly underground hip hop, obviously, but in hard to find mediums. So physical copies of records, CDs that aren't really a big thing anymore. Tapes are making a comeback. So they would be stocking all these different things. And a couple months back, they were under fire for, they're losing. They're going under. Okay. They decide to close shop. And another hip hop artist that we've known and have seen across, you know, well, I haven't seen, but Chaps has ran into him and crossed paths with him over the years. I call him the Mike King, who's now a very successful web developer. And I don't even know what to call him, but like I can just watch him through social media. So I get kind of an idea what he does. But anyway, he decided to step in, and because of his expertise, he's regenerating this website.
Okay.
So what we've noticed in the past is that like over the last 2-3 years, underground hip hop and rap has kind of had a resurgence. Like it's not,
it's like it went through another
wave. Yeah, it went through a wave, definitely. Like, it's at a point where it's becoming a lot more critical. It's becoming a lot more at the forefront of new music. Not to say that, like, other music isn't, but, like, we find more relevancy in it. And we think that we could fit in and help talk to some of these people that, don't have the resources to get themselves out there in the marketing push. And we say, well, we like what you're doing a lot. We want to help you push ahead. That being said, there's also other, you know, we want to push the brand of Third Verse and obviously the brand of CFCR. So there's a lot of like other things that tie in. Like we're always trying to, you know, fundraising drives all the time for the community radio station is big. So that's another way to get our name out and, talk to more people and maybe hit on a subject or an artist people like and get them involved in CFCR in a more direct way, I guess.
That's really cool.
Bridge in.
Yeah. That's well thought out. And I can definitely see how all the pieces are aligning there.
Yeah. So there's other stuff coming up. We really want to get merch done. We've got a really cool batch of logos done by Noise as well, because he's a graphic designer, and really excited about like potentially having Third Verse merch, like t-shirts, and like we've been talking all kinds of stuff. But like Third Verse has been on the air for 20 years at this point, well, 22 now, and
dang,
not always in under our guidance, but Chaps has been there since the beginning pretty much. But it's something that like is Saskatoon is kind of famous for, and any of the rap homies that have come in from across the world and know anybody in Saskatoon has probably been on the air or at least played directly on the air and featured. So
man, that's awesome.
It's kind of like a really cool legacy to be part of. That's, you know, and we want to make sure that people are aware of it. And if you're interested and like rap music, then you know, support the brand, support, you know, what we're doing, and make sure the community radio lives on, because we can't continue to do this without support from people who are listening. So
exactly. Well, I'll put all the links and stuff when I put this together. So
that'd be awesome.
Put all the links that
great
need in there, and and as well, I'll get you to just list them out near the end there. But maybe while people are listening, if there's something that they could look up, well.
Our main focus right now is kind of our Instagram page. That's third.verse.cfcr. And we post up pretty much every week. We're trying to just build a followership. And as time goes on, we add to our Facebook page, which also uses the same like hashtag or, you know, sequence. Everything is pretty much the same as third.verse.cfcr across the board. Yes. Our Twitter is third_verse_cfcr, just because Twitter doesn't let us use dots in it. So really easy to find. We made it a focus to try and simplify finding us. That's kind of as well my philosophy in terms of everything I do. And I guess I've learned that from a couple friends of mine who kind of shaped my social media strategies, I guess, the best way. Ryan Stinson's a good friend of mine, and when I was doing my first major album, I guess, and talking with him, that was his focus, was that like, if you make a website or you want to make a page, you need to make it as dummy proof as possible. So that's kind of been our focus in terms of when coming up with these things. We don't want to make it too difficult and something that sticks in your head. So,
and simple's always better.
Right, exactly. But then again, because we're at the age in the internet, right, where everything's kind of been chosen, third.verse is not available. So, you know, you gotta pick and choose your how do you get there.
One of the hardest things, like, I don't have the same username across
and platforms. It's tough, right? Because somebody's already taken it, especially with like some of these new platforms that pop up, and then, you know, they get an explosive user base right off the start, and everything's kind of taken because that's probability of it, right?
Right. Well, what I've been doing now is when a new platform comes out that I hear about,
whatever it is, yeah,
and then I just go in and just get my username right away.
Yeah.
So that, you know, if I do decide to use it, then I got it.
Exactly. Good idea. That's the other thing is like, where do you stop, right? Because like at this point, I keep hearing about them in like, in the margins, I guess, when they start coming up, but nothing's really popped up yet that has been as useful or like user friendly as Instagram or Snapchat or anything. That's kind of it. True. At this point.
Yeah.
But I know that there's more out there that I probably should be, you know, getting ahead of the curve on.
Well, for you, actually, Anchor, I think, would be great.
And what's that?
It's like a short. So think of Twitter, but with audio.
Okay. And so it's just short, like just short, like kind of podcast things, but like
you can. Yeah. There's some people that do that, but you could put music. You can put anything.
Really? Okay.
And it's just short blips. And I don't know what the time frame is. Like, I mean, I did it once.
Yeah.
I think I should do it more. There's a decent base there, I think. But
yeah. Okay. I'll check it out. That's definitely something, again, because this year I've been not focusing, but promising myself that I would try and finish off a couple of these music projects I've got going on and work on some new stuff. And then as well with the carpentry things, try to push more of that on in terms of like as well the helping the DIYer. So I'm
okay.
One thing I want to do this year and do more of this year is like get into the space of, oh, you are looking to fix this problem in your house, or you have this issue, or you want to do this. And I kind of give some basic steps to kind of line out.
Perfect, man.
So that, again, it empowers my audience, hopefully, one, and two, creates me as a kind of a consultant place.
Exactly.
For people that are looking to do things, and maybe, you know, you just call me up or hit me up with a message or something, so that, you know, more presence in. Even though at some point I think I'm going to tap out on the amount of work I can actually do, but I still need to be visible, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think also just by giving away that information, what happens is they hear it, and not everyone is going to just do it themselves anyways.
Right.
And they're like, okay, well, this guy knows.
Exactly.
I'm gonna call him.
Exactly. Right. And that's again, another thing I've been playing with is like as simple as things that like I feel they are. To some people, they're going to be extremely difficult or scary to even start thinking about taking on, but they know they have to do it in terms of like, you know, fixing your house or fixing something around the place. And I think that is definitely the way to open up new avenues instead in marketing, especially.
For sure.
Because I honestly don't have a marketing budget with my business. So that's the way that I think I'm going to make inroads with creating, you know, a bigger network of potential clients.
Exactly. There's so many free things out there.
Yeah.
You just pick up a camera and
exactly.
You get a phone already, right?
Right. That's what's amazing to me in this day and age is that like I'll never let go of my laptop because I don't feel comfortable doing bigger projects, even on my iPad or my phone. And I know it can be done, and I know there's apps out there to be like editing and writing the things that I do. And like even the website creation, but at the same time, I don't feel comfortable. But it's crazy to me that people are generating like high quality media and stuff like that straight from their phones.
That's crazy. Just on their phone too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I don't know. I couldn't do it myself.
No.
Like anything with video or photo, I have to use my computer.
Yeah, exactly. But everybody's telling you like, oh, just get away from it. Just get a tablet or get a phone, like a really high power phone. And I'm just, no, I can't do it.
Yeah, like, well, I guess before I started like anything with video or photo.
Yeah.
Or podcasts as well. I had a computer. It was all right. Wasn't powerful enough to produce things very quickly.
Yeah.
So I just use my phone for business and then that computer every once in a while.
Yeah.
But I figured out how to use and make everything that I need for business-wise on the phone.
Really?
And then, but then it got to the point where I kind of grew out of that and I needed to make better and higher quality stuff that the phone, I couldn't figure out how to use it or do it on the phone.
Yeah.
And then since I just learned on the computer, I just...
You're talking like
comfortable.
You're invoicing and you're emailing and stuff like that.
Yeah, like all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the other thing is that I'm always, you know, you always want to refine those things. And I find like I've got multiple drafts over the years of like my invoicing and quoting. And I've kind of like built a giant database of templates. And I just can't even imagine having to like fill in prices on my phone and then creating a PDF and sending that out from there. It's just, it's, you know, it's too difficult and like... Too much information in one small screen.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's, I mean, I think it depends on the app, but there's an Adobe app.
Yeah.
That lets you edit PDFs.
Oh, really?
So then it's already formatted and stuff.
That would be a good idea.
But anyways, yeah.
Definitely.
I'd have to look up exactly what that app is called. But
nice.
It's really, really helpful. And then I, of course, just, you already have the signature on there for like contracts and stuff.
That's a good point. You need that. Definitely.
But it's funny, like, yeah, for video editing, I can't see how people do that.
No.
It doesn't make sense to me.
No.
I tried it once. Like, I, what was it, 2011? I tried vlogging for the first time.
Yeah.
I did, like, two episodes.
Yeah.
And I was just on, like, the original iPad, first one.
Yeah.
And, like, this HD camera I bought. And didn't turn out. It was just, like, 8 hours for a one-minute clip. And I was, like... Nope, not doing that again.
No, not through. Yeah, all the editing software on an iPad, it'd be rough.
Because you'd make one cut, and then you'd have to just, it was almost like dial-up. You make a cut, just set it down, do something, come back. Okay, now I can continue.
Perfect.
But I guess that, the technology has increased, so I can see how maybe on like one of the new iPads might be possible.
Yeah.
So tell me about your rap.
So I've been kind of making music for over half my life now. Nice. Since I was 15 or 16, I think I recorded my first song. I'm 31 as of this February. And I kind of just played around with it in high school, and I went to university and I started meeting a bunch of people in Saskatoon that I'd been listening to, through Sask Hip Hop at the time. It was a website, and I got a hold of a lot of Saskatoon's producers, Factor, one of them, Nolto, Cam the Wizard, and Kay the Aquanaut, and Ira Lee at the time in high school, and a bunch of other people from around Canada. But moving to Saskatoon for my university career allowed me to not become friends with them at the time, but I started meeting, I met Chaps, is actually the first guy that I met. He's always been a guy that is happy to introduce himself and make you feel at home. I would always go to rap shows or go to events and kind of stand in the back row because I was always a fan. And he was the first guy that came up and said, "Hey man, how you doing? You're Chapter Thrive," because that was my rap handle on the internet at the time. Still is. But he recognized me from, I guess, whatever, Sask Hip Hop. And we became friends over the years. As a result, I got to know a lot of the main players in Saskatoon. And over my university career, I decided that I'd been waiting too long to actually do something of any importance, I guess, in hip hop.
Okay.
And if I'm just dabbling, then I'm not really doing anything and, you know, making a song here and there and trying to, you know, piece together something. So I think it was in my, it was my third year of university. I came home for winter break and I decided that I was going to make my first rap album in before my at that time, 21st birthday. So that was 2007. Yeah, 2007. Right. So I came home over winter break and basically produced about half of the album myself because I was getting into producing at the time and learning how to use, like, I had an old turntable that I borrowed from my dad at the time and a few pieces of equipment and a lot of records that I just bought in dollar bins. And I'd got into it learning from a couple of people around town. Mike Gaff helped me out with first couple of my first break records. Like, that was the biggest thing back then, was that I always wanted to make sure that I was doing the correct thing in hip hop. So at the time it was that you weren't using keyboards or pre-played drums. Everything that I'd made at the time was all drums that I'd been able to get from records that I knew, or because of Mike Gaff, he sold me a couple records that had really good drums on them and a really good foundation.
Okay.
And I used those records almost extensively for my drums and stuff like that. And then I had a couple of friends from Sask Hip Hop that were passing me beats because they liked what I was doing at the time. And so over the month of January, when I went back to school, I basically split my time. I'd go to school for the 5-6 hours a day, then I'd come home and I'd have a schedule that I had to make a beat or a song. And basically, it worked out. By the time my birthday came around, February 1st, I had finished an album and I had burnt, I think, 100 copies of it. Nice. And then spray painted and then the album or the CD itself. And my friend Joel Van der Zwan did the cover, and I released my first album, and I was really proud of it. And from that point, a lot of different things happened. I kind of started another rap group with a couple of friends here in Saskatoon, Schizophrenic at the time, he's now goes by Schizza, and another guy, Ethic Nine. We called ourselves Something Fresh, and we played and performed probably, there are some points where we play at least once a month, sometimes twice.
Oh, yeah.
We were playing a lot, and I think I learned a lot about performing. I actually performed by myself as a solo artist probably 3 times prior to starting that group. And so I learned a lot about performing live and being in a group and kind of playing a role in terms of the theatrics on stage.
Okay.
I think that kind of might sound corny, but the more that I perform live, the more I realize that who you are as an artist has to have a personality that kind of sticks. And I'm not saying that I'm creating a personality that's not my own, but it's a part of my own personality that
is an accentuated version.
Right. Exactly. And so that was a really good learning experience. We made a lot of songs. I learned a lot about recording, 'cause I was doing most of the recording for our, at the time, upcoming album that we were trying to put together. I built kind of a small studio of a couple pieces of equipment, and Tyler Schizophrenic was making a bunch of beats, and we had a bunch of producers, and I actually recently put together a mixtape of some of the mostly finished stuff we had, things that weren't crazy mixed down or mastered. We didn't have anything mastered at the time, and we had close to, I think the mixtape I put out had 30 or 32 songs. Oh, wow. That we had in various stages of completion, but those are the ones that were enough to basically say I can put this out with some kind of confidence and say,
right,
here's some Something Fresh songs from 2000 seven to 2010 basically.
Right.
And then I finished my university career, and my friend Ryan, a guy from Swift Current, Ryan Stinson, I became pretty good friends with him over the years. I can't even remember how, but we've been really good friends for a long time. He's been kind of one of my mentors and closest confidants. He lived with me for a while when he moved to Saskatoon and needed a place to stay. So I had a house on Main Street, and at that point, he moved in and said, let's make an album. So that's when we got started on creating my first commercially produced album. Not saying that it's poppy or anything, but the fact was we actually spent money on making sure the photos were taken properly.
Right, and went to the next level.
Went to the next level and kind of, again, learned a bunch of things about producing and marketing a product like that, which as much as I enjoyed the rap portion of it and creating the songs with Ryan, because he would make the beats and I would rap, and basically putting together something that's cohesive around a concept that we worked out basically based on the first couple songs that I'd made, because I was going through kind of a big transition point in my life at the time, called the album 20 something. And so we built this concept of what are some universal ideas that anybody around our age at the time could relate to and feel at home in, right? And then as well make songs that are approachable and not abrasive and fit together. And so, yeah, we physically pressed that album up, and I had about 500 copies I think we made. And
can I ask you a question? Sure. About the group? Yep. So what was I guess thought process behind being solo and then transitioning to a group? Like, what was the benefit? I guess there's more people behind it, but I mean,
there's a bunch of different things. Strategic, like I'm always thinking about things in terms of strategy. Myself at the time when I put that first album out, giving away a bunch of stuff, 300 copies. And what I realized over that course of the thing is that my network is so small that even if I can get into some of these fan bases around Saskatoon that, like, at the time liked all of Side Road stuff and the Intelligentlemen, and then there was another group of guys at the time called Unsatisfied Poets, and there was a couple other like outlier groups, Numbers, that Schizophrenic, and like No BS was in there, I think, and Enzo, and like a couple other, like B-Side was another rapper in that crew. And I realized, like, I'm by myself, and at the time I was kind of an introvert and not really good at talking about myself or interjecting myself into like conversations and making friends. I was kind of, like I said, I was an outlier and not somebody who was easily like getting into these groups and fan bases and okay. conversations.
So it was leveraging
right
off of other people's I guess that's the wrong way to word it. You're partnering with them.
Right, exactly. Because
collabing.
At the time, because again, I had gotten to become friends with Schizophrenic over the course of making my first album. He was actually on there with B-Side. And again, he was another guy that at the time I made friends with really quickly, because we had similar mindsets to how we would be at rap shows. So like, I wasn't the guy getting drunk and wiling out in the front row. I was kind of hanging out in the back, and don't get me wrong, that happened a lot.
Yeah,
but being a student and where he was coming from, we ended up standing kind of, you know, in that same area of the show, and over the course of time become good friends. And I recorded a couple of songs with him, and then I can't remember how we got introduced to Ethic. And he was really gung-ho at the time. He's like, I want to make music with you guys. Like, you guys are killing it. Because I did a show with his crew, Unsatisfied Poets. They were doing their kind of yearly thing, and they liked what I was doing, and they asked me to perform with them, opened up their show. And, yeah, I became friends with those two other guys, and they're like, we should just make a crew and work on some stuff. Because I think Skizza understood, like, one, that I had a like working recording studio that could produce pretty quality material, and I saw the benefit of, like, you know, I realized how much work it is to build an album inside of a month and try and get a project like that done, and then how much else is involved. So I realized if I got to continue my school career, I kind of need more support around me, and being in a group allows you to spread jobs, you know, that are required to do it amongst other people.
Because now you're all working together, and instead of the amount of work one person can do, now there's the amount of work three or multiple people can do.
Exactly.
So you'll get even
And further. we had more visibility, because at the time we were playing with the three of us, we probably opened for almost every show that Haywood put on at the time, because we had a great following. People loved our music. We were really dynamic, really energetic. And the other thing is, again, when I talk about the personality thing, is like between the three of us, who I am on stage and the type of music I made at the time, I don't want to say it was like all the same, but like the weird songs I would make and the like kind of marginal things that I was doing because of what I was interested in at the time, like songs with topics that like the average hip hop listener is not going to like, oh yeah, this is, you know, this is the next jam. Like, it wouldn't be, it would be like, this is really weird and I don't understand like his references. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So the songs that I was making that I knew had appeal, needed more personality to them. And like, Ethic was completely different from who I was in terms of style and delivery. Same thing with Schizophrenic. So the three of us were kind of like three sides of a tripod in terms of how each of us delivered raps. Each of us were really able to make songs together that worked really well together, like conceptually. And we all fit together really well. But yeah, it was interesting to see like the dynamic between the three of us.
So right now with your carpentry.
Yeah.
Are you're partnered with one other person?
Yeah, right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And do you approach that in a similar way?
Yes and no. The idea I've got for my carpentry business is kind of the foundation of an idea I've been working on for a long time. And it spans a lot of different things, not just carpentry, not just construction. But right now, at this point in my career, that is the main focus. That being said, my business partner, Mark, is a really hard worker, and he's really good at putting the work in and smashing out projects on a physical level, right? So I really enjoy particular work. I enjoy doing tile work, I enjoy doing flooring, I enjoy doing finishing work, I enjoy framing it to the point, but a lot of construction and a lot that you don't see behind like the social media that we might produce is that there's a lot of menial stuff in there that takes time and takes, you know, it's not the grunt work, but you need to be able to hammer out long periods of, oh, I've got to concrete a trench for today. You know what I mean? Like that's not an appealing part of it, but it's a necessary part of construction because that there's foundations to it. So he kind of takes care of those portions of the work. And for the most part lately, I've been looking after the acquiring jobs and marketing us on whatever level we do and the invoicing and the, you know, quoting and things like that. And then I'm finding that I'm more in the director's seat. So I'll come up with, if a job comes, I'll deal with the client. I'll deal with the subcontractors. I'll deal with the quoting and the details and the permit office and everything and kind of put it all together and then create a pathway for Mark. And now basically our helpers or whoever we've got giving us a hand at the time, where we need to go and how we have to get there. So I think that's been an evolution of like even my own, because back then, again, thinking about the transition, I wasn't always in the driver's seat. And sometimes being in the driver's seat at the time, like when I did that first album, was very, you know, scary and difficult to keep a track of everything. Like if you have 50 moving parts, even on a project that's not even that big of a deal, it's still a lot to, like, it makes someone anxious, right? But over the years and now with experience, I'm realizing that I'm really good at being in the driver's seat as long as I have the time to be in that driver's seat, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
And it also allows me at this point to be directing our business kind of in a way that gets us towards some of my longer term goals and some of the things I'd like to achieve in my lifetime. And those aren't things that necessarily Mark comes up with, but he's on board with my ideas, if that makes sense. I think I'm not trying to downplay what he does because it's very important, but I'm the creative one and he's the kind of pragmatic one, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Totally makes sense. And so what are your future goals here?
So obviously, when I started construction, 7 years ago, working carpentry, I just noticed that there's a lot of like disconnect between what people think construction is and what companies actually do. And one thing that I kind of really disliked about the process of getting my apprenticeship going and my journeyman ticket, journey person ticket now, I guess, was that I worked in a commercial company, but rarely would I ever actually install anything or create anything.
Okay.
So we would go in and my company would say, we're doing this job. And so we, as the apprentices at the time, would be take down all of this stuff and get it to this point. And then the time would come for construction and various sub trades would come in. And I understand plumbing and I understand electrician work. But you'd have interior finishers, you'd have millwork finishers, you'd have all these different type of guys, and they'd come in and they'd do their job, but they would kind of, there'd be a disconnect between everybody on the site. Even if the supervisor and the general contractor was really hands-on, which we were at the time, but none of the subcontractors would be aware of what the other subcontractors were doing, from my perspective. Maybe I'm wrong, but at the time, right, I felt like
it's more of a cookie cutter thing,
right?
You know, you got one thing to do, and
that's
do
you
it.
Do that today on this site, and you do it on the next site the next day. And so, as a result, I would find the finishing contractors would be getting into situations that could have been avoided because I was watching them could have been avoided, but the contractors that came before them weren't really aware of like how they were doing something would screw somebody over three steps down the path. So I
know exactly. I used to do stonework with my dad.
Yeah.
You know, like putting stone on the outside of a house. And then, what was it? Yeah. If they just having things level was so difficult sometimes. Like if a window was in, it was just like a little bit off, then you got to cut every single piece going up.
Exactly. Cause it has, everything has to work together as a whole.
Yeah.
And so, I guess with my goal learning from that point was that, I wanted to create a company where everything was kind of, everybody was part of everything. So I don't like subcontracting out my drywall as a lot of guys do. I don't like subcontracting out my finishing work as some guys do. I don't like being like, okay, here's a project. I'm going to call up my five subcontractors and they can come do all the things. And so I want to be able to say like, we did all the demo, I guess is the best way to put it. We did all the framing, we did all the boarding, we did all the mudding, taping to the way that we want. So, cause we know what's happening in the finish on this particular area.
Right.
And we know what we're going to do and we have to prepare this wall this way. And if the client wants things hanging from the walls, we're already ready for that. Even if they weigh 1500 pounds, you know what I mean? Like we've already solved all the problems and we don't have to think about telling the next guy in the road, like, oh, this is what we heard. So you have to do this. And, you know, and the other thing is like down the road, I want to be able to have a shop and a company that basically employs electricians and plumbers and tin bashers and all the different trades, because again, those guys on a site, generally, they don't think about how what they're doing is going to affect a carpenter's finish. And as much as everybody wants to feel important on the site, the most important thing is that the client is happy. And so if the last people on the site are having the worst time trying to finish what they need to do that are going to be actually viewed, then
right.
you have to like think about everything from the foundation up and make sure that everything is installed perfectly and in harmony. Like it's a weird thing to think about in terms of construction, but it's been kind of my philosophy for like years in terms of everything is a culmination of everything that came before it. And so if I had a crew that employed a plumber and electrician and they helped on terms of like, we're doing the demo and the framing, then they can see where they're going. They're fitting into the puzzle and then how their work, because after they're done, then they help in the finishing. And right. Now they have a better understanding of saying, oh, so if I cut these holes here, then we have to do something really, because they put their rough in and they walk away and they come back and they do their fixtures and they don't see like 60% of the job between that point, right? Like
right.
that's the point where you now have to problem solve around a bunch of the things that they did, where as if you had a conversation with them and they have viable solutions to problems and I have viable solutions to problems, but we need to make a hybrid of like that solution and make something that works for us and make sure that the client, one, isn't upset about it, and that two, it doesn't disturb the overall idea of the build. Right. So that's kind of the idea with the construction side of things. There's kind of, again, we talked about earlier, how I kind of want to empower people and get them feeling comfortable doing simple, not simple, but like more difficult jobs. And an idea that I've been working on and kind of plugging away at over the last couple of years is, I don't know if this is what it's going to be called, but my idea is the Carpenters Guild. And, down the road, my eventual thing is that I would like to own and operate a large scale shop, similar to like, say, what SIAST does.
Okay.
But the problem is that SIAST has, all these tools and equipment, but it's only available if you're a student there. Like right. Some of the crazy stuff that, like, when I was doing my apprenticeship in Saskatoon, having access to this stuff was like, I've never seen, you know, a drum sander that's 32 inches wide and I can put door faces through it and sand down a door, like a finished door, in seconds. Like, that would make my life super easy and be able to like expand the things that I could do dramatically. But the other thing is that when I was starting out and I wanted to do side work, or I wanted to, like, if I wanted to build something or learn something, there's no real place to do that in Saskatoon. And to my understanding, I haven't seen anything that's been done in similar areas. Cause not that I'm doing a huge pile of research, but I keep my eyes open in terms of what's going on in different, in like this industry in other cities and where I've been, like Calgary, Vancouver, things like that. And what I'd like to do is just create a space where you up and coming carpenters or even DIYers or whatever have access to a bunch of tools and have access to space and have access to somebody that can help them figure out their problems. To like, I have this thing I want to build, but I don't have a garage for it. I don't have the tools I need. I don't have, you know what I mean? Like, I would just like to, beyond just creating social media that people can consume and think about and react with and empower themselves with, but actually give them a space and an opportunity to do these things.
And that's great. That's awesome.
So that's kind of a,
I love that.
The long-term, one of the long-term goals. And that, again, that fits into a bunch of other things that like, I kind of want to talk about, but at the same time, the business plans are like, being an entrepreneur, I kind of got to hold some of them tight to the chest. I don't, it's like, you don't,
I know what you mean, yeah.
You don't want to like give away a bunch of things, because I've been thinking about how all these things fit together for so long. And I realized that like, if I give a piece away of it and someone's like, oh, that's a great idea. Like, I'm not saying that like your listeners are doing that, but
yeah.
I've already felt like some of my ideas, like I had one and somebody already brought it to market. And I'm like, man, if I had the money at the time, this would be, I can see that it would be taken off. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, and that's kind of the frustrating thing about being creative, but not being able to get to that point. Like, it's just out of your reach in terms of the money aspect of it or the time aspect of it, I guess.
Right. But is that person going to do it as good as you would?
That's a completely like different, I guess, conversation, right? Like, And there's also different like forms of that idea, right? Like, for instance, the idea I had that's gone to market, they did it and it's exactly what I would like to do, but on a scale smaller and more oriented to like some specifics. So I want to do it on a bigger level, but I need to like create this idea of that Carpenters Guild and a bunch of things that operate around it. Excuse me, so they can all fit together inside okay. of that. So
nice.
I definitely like, because that's, again, being a commerce background and where I started and all the marketing and all the finance and all the other things that I've like watched and done and kind of been a part of, I'm really aware of what am I doing that separates me from the rest, right? So especially in carpentry, because there's so many people doing carpentry in Saskatoon already, because there's a huge boom in the market in terms of, oh, everybody's buying houses. So everybody that can swing a hammer decided to start up a builder's company. And I think that's, you know, the market's saturated and some people I know are really struggling to find work right now because there's too many and there's too much competition in the market. And there's not enough diversification. So people don't think about how do I separate myself from the pack. And that's been my whole thing, is that every idea I have has to be different not different, like, but able to differentiate itself,
right?
And something that, and have an aspect of it that is, you know, worth paying that extra dollar for,
right?
Not that I'm saying we're making piles of money, but why do you pick me over somebody else? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the differentiation factor. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean, man, because that's kind of what I've been battling with this, like, since I started.
Yeah,
magic and hypnosis, just always trying to be different. Because like at first I would just, I think with most magicians, you see a trick performed, you learn that trick, and then you do it the same way.
Yeah.
And now I'm just like, just trying to do things completely
you
different.
You need to put your spin on it so that it's your personality out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And not only that, but like my marketing and stuff too, I want to try to make sure that when people look at my brand, they can noticeably see instantly that I'm different.
100%. Yeah.
So that's tough too.
Yeah.
Because you always think that, oh man, someone else that looks just like what I'm doing, but maybe not.
Yeah. And again, there's no, I don't feel upset about that. And ultimately, the ideas I have and I want to build aren't necessarily like money orientated, right? I'm not chasing them and not wanting to do them because they're going to make me money or they're going to make me rich. It's because
it allows you to do what you love doing more.
Right. And also gives opportunity to more people to do things that they love doing more. And I'm realizing as I get older that like money's not the cause that I'm chasing, and I'm not looking to, you know, buy a bigger house or a bigger truck or whatever the case it may be. I'm finding more enjoyment out of doing what I love and having the time to do what I love, because, you know, parts of my job I don't enjoy doing on some level. Not to say that I don't, like, you know, almost everything I do is not difficult. My day is not a pain in my ass.
Yeah.
But more time to be doing just creative things, creating, building, and then I see the enjoyment that I get out of it, and that's what I want to give to other people. So yes, ideas, I want to make money off them, but it's to cultivate more time for me to create more ideas, to give more people opportunities.
Exactly. Rinse and repeat, right? And continue.
Yeah.
Nice, man. I like that. It's people that want to help other people.
Yeah.
I believe are the winners.
And so that's like a funny thing is like you, and then sometimes you think like, am I lying to myself? Is this just something that I'm trying to like spin? But you know, I don't know. Cause sometimes it sounds really phony to say that. But realistically, like I'm comfortable in where I'm at and I'm doing the things I want to do. And I don't see that there being much more point to life than making everybody at that point. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah, like,
exactly.
Why would I hoard all of the money and time that I have if like that's all I'm working towards, where I can see enjoyment in other people and I can help them like realize things that they couldn't do or can do now and want to do. And you know, that's real enjoyment to me, I guess.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you're saying that sometimes that other people may feel like or view it as phony or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that stems back to like what we're fed through other type of media, where, you know, you don't usually hear that sort of that side of things.
Right.
We usually hear about, oh, these guys here, they just became huge and made billions of dollars, right?
Yeah.
And like the creator of Facebook, for instance, right?
Yeah.
You hear those different stories, and then you hear like an honest story of someone coming up, and
yeah,
you think, oh, that doesn't fit with what I think is supposed to happen.
Right, because there's a narrative already that's happening and how we're fed stories and how people don't trust rich people. Don't trust rich people because they don't have your intentions. But maybe, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's a story and kind of like a discussion that's been happening since like, you know, the 80s and 90s. And I think that like this generation, I'm not saying this generation coming up, millennials, but I'm saying the age at which I'm at and the people that are my peers and your peers, I guess, like you're around my age, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're actually considered millennials.
Yeah. So strangely I think enough. That. Again, I'm like, I watch in terms of like politics and things like that. These are things that I'm always constantly like watching and reading and listening to. And I honestly do think that the attitude towards personal growth and personal standing in the world is changing. And I think that's going to be the way things start to shift, is that like people realize they don't need five houses. They don't need, that's not the goal to work towards in terms of like, at least in my understanding and the people that I surround myself with.
For sure.
And that's going to change a lot of ways that like the world operates. If everybody kind of starts working with a narrative that like, I've got what I need and I've got more time and resources and I don't know what to do with them, well, I'm going to help the person next to me and get them to where, elevate them to where I'm at.
You know exactly. What
I mean? And I think that's going to be a big change in terms of like the generation that comes before us and the way that they dictate that, you know, time and money is spent, because what's appropriate and what's coveted, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you.
Sure.
It's kind of more of a question for your opinion on, because that recently I've been in talks with some other magicians in the local area.
Yeah.
And considering teaming up with them.
Yeah.
In some way. Is that like, how should I ask it? Like, do you see that as something? Because usually when you see a magician, it's always just like one guy, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think that could work out?
I feel like it probably could. Again, my biggest thing again is like thinking about the strategy behind it, and making sure that everybody involved is on the same page, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're willing to go out and say, yeah, let's team up and make sure the money's good between all of us, and you know, we're gonna feed each other jobs and make sure everybody's kind of like spread around and doing the right thing, and because Saskatoon's getting big, but I don't know what your market's like, right?
Yeah.
So
well, right now we're like basically all of us are in a B2B type of market where
right.
we sell to other businesses for
yep.
you know, private functions, Christmas yep. parties and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I think it would almost be like two different, like if you teamed up with another carpentry
yeah.
business. So, because on one hand, I'm thinking, okay, if I do that, and they may not even be listening, I don't care, that's okay. By the time they
yeah.
hear it, maybe we shook or hands and we decided to.
Yeah.
But anyways, so on one hand, it's like, okay, if we team up, I'm going to be helping them market themselves more.
Yep.
And vice versa.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. So there's a selfish part, but then there's like this other part that's like, man, we could actually go further though together.
Right. Because possibly. Again, it's that whole group dynamic that I think is really, if you can find the right people, that's the biggest thing, right? Because in my instance, the market price of say like the work that I do, that's kind of very murky in terms of like people don't understand pricing, and I don't know what the situation like in your industry.
Oh yeah, they don't.
Right, like if you could give them a price and then they're like, well, what does that mean? Like I don't understand why you're, you know, this is what we're paying for your show, like
yeah,
but because they don't have any comparables. Right, that's the problem, is like that's, and that's something that like even in real estate you see them always talking about, what's the comparables, what's the house down the street costing, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And but part of like creating that market price of the product you're selling is having at some level some kind of like, it's not collusion, but like at least discussion amongst your peers and saying like, okay, we all deliver a similar product and it should be this price, and now we've all decided that we're not going to drop our, you know what I'm saying? Like if you have somebody in the market who doesn't agree with what you're doing and he's doing a similar show and saying, I'll take half the price.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It lowers the entire market.
Right. So now everybody expects you guys to do that, even though maybe your quality is 10 times better. But if people don't understand what they're getting, the price doesn't jive in their head. Again, this is like an economics
yeah.
thing, right? Like, because that's another thing that I've been super interested in my whole life is like, how does price affect your choice to make a decision, right? Like, so I think there's definitely benefit in that in terms of like creating more awareness of where you guys are at in terms of quality. I mean, where you guys are at in terms of price and delivery of service and professionalism, that's all different things. And yeah, the only thing that I would say is that making sure that all of you are on the same page and willing to work as a group and not self-motivated, you know, for the most part, you know what I'm
saying?
Because again, if you have a network and they have a network and everybody has a network and this, like, for instance, even just this week, my friend Trevor he's a framer and he's been a good friend of mine since second year carpentry. And he and I pass each other jobs or references all the time. Like, that's the biggest thing. I can't do this right now. I'll give you my buddy's number and he does this and he's really good at it. And so with a network of like, you know, I don't know, however many of you performers there are, you can now spread jobs around and say like, okay, we have to make sure that we're all fed. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a collective thing. And I think that's another thing that's kind of becoming more and more prevalent in, again, millennial economies, because we're more aware of if I'm doing good, I should make sure that my peer's doing good, or like, you know, and then going beyond Saskatoon, beyond Saskatchewan, right? Like, you've got more power behind you in a system like that. I think it would probably work out for you as long as like these guys are,
as long as they work as hard.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess, on one side, it's like, I want to make sure that we all produce the right quality of live show.
Yeah.
And then as well, I'm also thinking, well, could I just do this all myself? I don't know. I feel like if I just like refined my day more to like maybe every 10 minutes or so.
Yeah. Rather than, I know what you're doing. Yes.
Then I think I could do it all, but
that takes a lot of like a lot of self-control and maintenance. And that, like, that's the crazy thing, is like getting to that level of like specification of your time is like, you need to have it. Like, that's something I've been really working on, is like scheduling my days and just trying to have like a general schedule day to day.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. Like, and I know you're probably reading some of the same books I am.
Probably.
And that like, you want to be specified and like, if you got to do this task, it has to be done in this time because you scheduled it for that, right? Like,
right.
But I don't know, like, are you finding that you're gaining headway that way? Like,
well, I'm getting faster.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll schedule like a 50-minute chunk.
Yeah.
I won't. Sometimes I'll get it done now.
Yeah.
But when I first started, it was like, no, I have to put another hour into this.
Right.
To get to where I thought. So I scheduled too many things in one day.
Yeah.
And then
you don't feel good about it because you're like, I was going to finish all this stuff and I only got half of it done. And you had all these expectations built. And then you're like, I know the feeling.
So I would start a whole week like that. I would be like, hey, this day I'm doing this much.
Yeah.
And then I wouldn't. But that would get I would get that list done in that week.
Yeah.
So now it's spread out for the whole week.
Yeah.
But I think it's just repetition every day. Just
refining your progress. Yeah.
One thing I found is just creating on the calendar on your phone.
Yeah.
And putting an alert on.
Yep.
And then just going through. So, and then just like turning notifications off of social media and stuff.
Yeah.
So that the only notification and the only habit of grabbing your phone, because we all do that, right?
Yeah.
You get a notification, boom.
That's a good point.
Is you look at it, okay, and then you just act immediately on it.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've been, I don't do it down to like every single minute.
Yeah.
Like some people I'm sure are in the world, but I'm getting closer to that, I think. I hope I'm, like, I want to be there now, but I know that I'm not.
And what do you think that is, right? Because that's the thing, is that like, we're always taught in terms of like, oh, there's a, you have a personality type and you do these things. And, you know, if you're a personality, you're going to be this way and this is how you do. And people are like self setting themselves into these like molds. Oh yeah, there's only two ways that I could be. And I don't think that's really the case, but I think,
no, not at all.
you know, growing up and going through all, like, even through university and going through, like, organizational behavior classes, being like, this is the type of person you are. And then you fit part of it. And so you try to, like, the rest of your, you let yourself become that personality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, like, right now, I feel like I'm trying to fix all the mistakes of, like, okay, I've created habits to fit into, like, this organizational behavior type or personality type.
Exactly.
And, but I want to be a different way. And I've now created a bunch of habits and quirks that I now have to fight to, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think those are necessarily right, but you know what I mean? Like, do you find that? That's, I don't know.
I find that for sure. Like, I used to be, and still a little bit, just procrastinate so much. And that stemmed just from high school.
Right.
It's just like, wow.
I definitely know the feeling. Waiting till the last minute to turn in assignments.
Yeah.
Waiting till the last minute to, like, you know, get something done, making the phone call. Yeah, I know the feeling.
Oh, yeah. You're cramming and then you, like, create, you just, like, write down all the equations quickly and you're, like, trying to remember it.
Yeah.
Or you put it in your calculator so you just
pick it. All the tricks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like, because I didn't start magic till after high school, but I felt like little things like that was kind of like, it should have clued into me earlier that maybe I should be doing some sort of thing on magic.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand that it's kind of what I was doing already.
Yeah.
But
like learning the tricks on how to be, like, sleight of hand and stuff, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It sounds really bad, like cheating on tests, but whatever.
We all did it at some point, right? Like the pressure gets to you to some point that you're like, I can't do this physically and I can't live with myself if I don't get this. Like at some level, the trade-off becomes too much and you're like, I could cheat on this, but I could get thrown out of university or I could get thrown out of my program or whatever it is. And so you don't. And then you learn to deal with, you know, you learn a lesson at some point.
Oh, for sure. And, oh man, if I had a cell phone in high school, I would have.
Yeah, that's the thing.
100% in everything.
Yeah.
Like,
it would make life so much easier. And that's kind of funny when you think about it, right? Like, just even doing the studying, the research you had to do in high school and not having access to those things at your fingertips, like, the ability to, like, go on the internet, obviously, is, like, at that time was really slow and clunky and not, like, but right now, like, when I hear kids complain about how difficult high school is or even university is, and I'm, like, thinking back, like, man, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, like, my life would have been so much easier with this thing in my hand.
Yeah. I think it's just because they grew up with it now.
Yeah.
It's all they've known.
Yeah.
So it's almost, like, too much information.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, why should I learn it? I could just look it up.
Right. That's a whole, like, other can of worms in terms of, like, and that bugs me. And that, like, that I could just look it up and rattle off the answer if somebody asked me a question. But, like, this all ties back to, like, my approach to learning and doing anything as a whole, right? Is that, like, I don't ever want to get to the point where I stop learning. Like, every day I want to learn something new.
Were you always like that?
I was in high school, definitely, like, and I don't think it was stemming from the fact that I wanted to learn something. It's the fact that in high school, I don't think in younger high school, I didn't really fit in. And so the way that I stuck out and was able to, like, make friends was by being the smartest guy in the class. Like, that was my goal. Nice. Was because then that way I'm a valuable asset to them. Oh, they have a question, they can, you know, ask me. And I think that's the way that I kind of dealt with that and got to that point. And then I don't know, it's been a result of maybe a couple of things after that. Like, I think in university I really didn't care, and I think I was burnt out and I didn't do the things that made me want to learn every day. And then I had a really bad accident in my third or fourth year university. Uh-oh. And I almost died on multiple occasions over the course of this accident. And it coming out of it, and like, how I'm not trying to, like, badmouth the people in my life at the time, but just where I realized where people aren't aware of you. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're only aware of you when they need something from you, but when you're needing them and not able to, like, ask for help, you really get an understanding of who and what cares about you in your life, and then how, you know, why you are who you are. So I did a lot of thinking after that accident.
And you mind me asking what happened?
I had a pretty bad snowboarding accident on a trip that I probably shouldn't have gone on. I didn't know anybody on the trip, and I was kind of trying to make more friends in my last university, being aware of how introverted I was, and not really having a huge network, and feeling pressures of coming out of university and not really being prepared to be in the job market and being scared of these things. I just said on a whim, yeah, I'll go with you. And I only knew one guy for less than a week. Like, he met me, and I had done a presentation, and he liked my presentation. We had a conversation and found out I liked snowboarding. And so I went on this trip, and the first day we got there, I hit a rock.
Oh no.
Not like dead on, but like
under the powder.
It stopped me, and I fell down the mountain and smashed my spleen and my left kidney, and pretty much destroyed my innards. And I didn't realize I was so badly injured, because I thought, like, well, I remember going through the air and thinking, like, I'm going to be a paraplegic. Like, I'm not going to be able to walk. Like, I knew that I was going to land really hard and probably on my back. Like, I remember thinking that. But getting up and being able to walk and just being, like, super tired and winded, I was like, oh, I'm good. And I just convinced myself that everything was all right. And then over the course of that evening, stupidly went to sleep and woke up and had, like, worst internal bleeding that I could possibly have. Then I realized, I'm like, I'm really in trouble. And I went down to the hospital in Cranbrook, first in Vermeer, and yeah, I had to get surgery. They opened me up, cut my, like, what was left of my spleen out, and sewed me back up inside. And then I spent a couple days in the hospital, well, 10 days in the hospital, and on antibiotics. And it's weird that it happened, because I woke up in the hospital, and they got a hold of my parents, and they drove all night, because it was like a 14-hour drive to where I was at.
Which hill?
I was at Panorama.
Okay.
But I ended up having to go to Cranbrook Hospital, because that's the only one in interior BC that's kind of, like, equipped to do surgeries that I needed. My parents had showed up the next day when I woke up. They were there, which is, I think, around 6 or 7. And my dad was sitting there in the hospital, and my grandpa had passed away 4 years previous. But one of the doctors casually mentioned that the guy in the bed next to me had a bacterial infection that I can't remember what it's called, but my dad recognized it as the infection that had killed my grandpa after he had gotten an antibiotic treatment to get rid of the pneumonia he had. And so basically his whole body was defenseless, and this bacterial infection that happens in hospitals routinely caught hold in him and killed him, basically, is what my grandpa passed away of.
Sorry to hear that.
Now it's like 12, 13 years ago. So,
yeah.
But my dad had noticed that and just said, like, you got to get him out of here. And so the guy next to me had this like infection at the time, and probably I was under such antibiotics that I probably would have got the same thing if I had sat in that room for a while. So there's a couple of occasions where, like, I didn't think about it at the time, and it's kind of weird. You're like, oh yeah, I'm just going through this, and it's really painful and difficult. And then you get home and you spend some time not sleeping and not, like, talking to people, because when you're in the hospital and you're awake, I feel like you're always talking. Somebody wants your attention, and you're not. The reason for that is you're not trying to. They're not. You don't want them contemplating mortality, I think.
Yeah.
That's why people go to hospitals, I think, to, like, hang out, even though it's a really difficult and sad time, especially if people are, like, on their deathbed or really sick or in real danger. People go to the hospitals to stop thinking about all the, you know, the difficult things that happen with, you know, your own fragility and your own mortality. And I think when I got home, I started thinking really hard about the effort I had put into my life that far and what I wanted to do with it and where I wanted to go with it. And I think that's really shaped in terms of my decision so far into trying to create my own business and trying to create my own philosophy in terms of what I want to do with that business and how I try to model my own life to constantly refine everything I'm doing and inspire other people, hopefully. I'm not saying I am, but that's the goal, is that other people want to pursue something that uplifts them without having to have that situation where you take a hard look at yourself and the real terrible, not terrible things, but like the things you're lacking and the things you're not trying your hardest for and where you could be doing better, but you're not doing better because you don't want to think about that. I don't know.
Well, you're inspiring me, man. Like, that's a very powerful story.
Thank you.
And it resonates well with me. I like it a lot.
Thank you.
I feel like more people need to hear that story.
Well, again, that's like a weird thing. Is it like, I don't know if it's a self-conscious thing, but I tell the story. I've told the story so many times over the years, and I kind of like, you know how you have a story and you have different versions of it based on who you're talking to and how you're talking to them. Like, well, I'm in a drinking situation, or I'm in a one-on-one conversation, or whatever the case may be. And you start to think like, again, am I being phony? And I read a lot of books about thinking about self-sabotage and how, like, you don't believe in yourself. And when you get to a certain level, you're like, am I just saying bullshit? Like, you're almost being self-aware and not realizing, like, yes, there's truth in it. But, and yes, there's, like, validity in it. But sometimes I wonder, like, am I really just saying things that are like inspiring or and trying to make clarity, or am I just saying things to like make myself heard in the world?
Right.
Which is kind of like a difficult, like, again, I'm constantly like trying to self-check myself in terms of like what I'm saying.
Okay.
Is it worth saying, like, or should I just keep my mouth shut? Do you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
I think that's the introvert coming out there. I think it should be both, though.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of both sides.
Yeah.
And then you just bring them both together, meet in the middle.
Right. And that's, again, something that, like, I've realized I do enjoy, like, having conversations like this and talking to people and talking to them about the things that make them who they are and learning from them. I do enjoy that extroverted part of it and getting into, like, really, like, heavy topics and then retreating back into myself and retreating back into like the spaces where I can be alone and think about them and write about them and, you know, develop ideas from one of my own. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. So what's the biggest difference, like difference in your mind, the way you think about things, let's say like 5 years ago to today?
I've learned to let my way is not necessarily the best way. I've become more humble, I think, in terms of how I try to direct my ideas. They're not always the best, and I need to realize that every day and every person that I meet has something to teach me or tell me. And I think 5-6 years ago, I probably on the same trajectory in terms of like where I want to go with my life. But as I've gotten older, I've realized that you have to be humble about the way you're learning and the things that you want to learn about. And even if you think you're a professional and the best at what you do, you're not. You can always be better.
There's always someone better than you.
100% of the time. And there's always ways to get better. You just have to be willing to take those steps to get there. And again, the other thing is like realizing that money isn't necessarily the path to happiness, and like that. The other thing again is that potentially that I can't do it all on my own.
Yep.
That's one thing I've really struggled with. And even though talking about being on teams and being in groups and working with people over the last like 3-4 years, my dad and my mom have always told me, like, you can't do everything, Chris, even though I know you want to and you think you can and you've got enough energy for it. And my friends, they're constantly like, you need to sleep more. And I would be foregoing sleep. And like, there's like, when I was working at Scratch, I was working ridiculous hours. I was working 4 nights a week in that bar and then 40 hours, sometimes 50 hours a week at my day job. And then somehow fitting in there like extra jobs to like get myself off the ground.
That's so funny.
And
it's a lot.
Yeah. But I mean, but the amount of like thinking that needs to be done at that point when you're just driven to like get through the night or get through the project, or like at that time back then, again, this is probably another thing that what you're doing is like so short-term focused. And now everything I do is almost always viewed through the scope of long-term, unless I like specifically have to say like, I need to look at this in the short term and how this is going to affect my day to day in the next week.
Right.
But all those short term plans added up to my long term goals. That's one thing that I've really focused on, I guess. That's the main thing, is that like everything now, even personally, politically, economically, like where do I fit into all those spheres? Doesn't matter in this year. It matters in where I'm going to be in 5, where I'm going to be in 10, where I'm going to be in 20 years. Like that's what, how I'm looking at everything, the lens of that. Like I make decisions on how do I feel now and what is that going to be like in the future.
Right. So do you have a huge goal that maybe it's hard to say out loud because some people might be like, oh yeah, right, you know what I mean? Do you have a goal like that? Because I mean, personally, I want to be the best hypnotist in the world by 2030.
By 2030?
Yeah.
That's doable. That's like, that's a legitimate, you know what I mean? I want to be building and operating and managing companies and buildings. I want to be like, I guess the way to say it is that I want to be a venture capitalist of ideas.
Okay.
Probably by 2025, 2030 would be like the time span I see of that.
So like, expand on that. Like, what do you mean?
So that idea that I have, that I'm going to talk a bit about it, even though like I've been like holding it so tight to my chest, but I realized that I need to talk to people about it to connect with more people. So that idea, that shop and that idea, I want to build a building that's, this is the anchor for it in the midterm, in that we build a building around the idea of the Carpenters Guild that supports not only my business, but a bunch of other businesses that they don't necessarily have to be connected to it. I don't care if they're, but what I care about is that they're passionate about their ideas and they need support and they're willing to take support and they're willing to lend support. So I want to build a community and of like-minded entrepreneurs and people who need space and equipment and help and guidance and consulting, and put it together in a way that doesn't have to be super crazy expensive. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
I feel like just talking to business owners who've been leasing or, you know, getting into owning, like looking at property and thinking about like, man, you pay a lot of money a month to just be there. And you're not getting anything like other than your presence, right? Like if you're going to pay money to be there, I want to, like, if your money that you are spending needs to give you a whole like suite of things, not just I get to be in this area that has a lot of people in it, right? Like, and then change the way that commercial, like this is like super specific and like kind of weird, but change the way that commercial real estate interacts with communities.
Right. So change the whole game.
Right.
Essentially.
Right. So that, like, you know, you might go down to this building and it's kind of like the farmer's market idea, but a more permanent kind of fixture of it. Right. Like farmer's market is like you bring in your products from out of town or your shop or whatever you're at, and you spend the afternoon there and you sell your products, where I want you come down to this community and it's you're building your ideas in real time, and people can witness that, and people can and buy into that, can like look at it. And then from there, like realistically, I find real enjoyment lately about kind of coaching my friends through getting their own businesses going, because I've had those experiences and I know, not like real in depth about the problems and issues that come with, like, you know, even registering a business. Like, I want my friends who have ideas to really like capitalize on them, make their money, make their mark on the world, and then create something where I can help those people become who they are. And then, like, long term, my biggest thing is, like, I want to live forever, but not in the sense that I'm not dead, but
yeah,
my ideas are there. Like,
exactly, your work lives on,
right, beyond what I'm doing. And, like, you know, we still learn Plato and Socrates in university and like in school, and those are like foundations of education that we still learn, like 4,000 or 5,000 years later. Do you know what I mean? Like, not saying, and I don't want to be like pompous enough in saying like I'm on that level, but that's like the unattainable goal of where this is all going, right? Like, right. I want to create something that lives for millennia.
Right. And even like think about generations, like of your lineage going forward, like your great, 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 great grandchildren.
Yeah.
Could listen to this.
Yes.
For instance. And that'd be
and know who I was hundreds of years before, right? Like,
yeah. So I'm just gonna do a quick check on these.
Sure.
One camera turned off. That one's still going.
Okay.
I think we're good.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a few technical aspects. I'm not sure why that camera turned off earlier, because there's still battery in it. I think there's something wrong with it, possibly. But we got that one going, so
nice.
We can still cut to that one when need be.
Okay.
But all right, yeah, got a little bit off train, but yeah, one of the, I guess, with my vlog and all the stuff I'm putting out,
yeah,
I just really enjoy the just thinking that when I'm like 80 or 85,
yeah,
I can prove to people I had hair.
yeah, like that's like such a small thing, but it like it makes sense, right? Like,
yeah,
you're like, I know where I'm gonna be in 40, 50, 60 years and what I'm gonna be thinking, and like, this is good.
Yeah,
yeah,
be able to watch these, check it out, and it was black hair.
Yeah,
can you imagine? Yeah, man, I enjoy like more and more starting to enjoy where I am, because there was a point in time where I would be like, oh yeah, I'm the best already.
Yeah.
And I'm not.
Yeah. No. And even though like you are doing amazing things and like creating amazing things, like, and doing great tricks and entertaining lots of people, you want to do more, right? Like,
yeah,
you want to reach out and like interact with more people. I think you know, at some point, yeah. Even with music, like, again, I'm getting that bug to do it, and I'm like realizing I have a lot of fun doing it, even though my audience isn't huge and it's probably fallen off quite a bit. It doesn't matter. I just want to keep working at it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Because that's another way to like get your ideas out, because event, like, songs last forever. Music, entertainment lasts forever if it's classic and timeless. And I feel like that's, you know.
Man, I could almost see, like, it just, I popped in my head here where you make a song and like you go through a tour of a house kind of thing, and you're like merging the two brands or whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like it would be a really fun way to like sell your services as a carpenter, or even like a house that you guys made.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would be kind of cool.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And so, but then that's the other thing is like, you think about that, like that would be cool to us and our peer generation, but like the people that are older than us be like, this is stupid.
Right. But then I guess then you'd maybe run ads of that video just to a certain age.
Right. Because that's what you can do now, is like specifically target people. That's like, that's the crazy thing about the internet we live in right now. It knows exactly who you are and how to target you.
Which is a little... Sometimes it feels a little weird, but I don't know. I don't care personally. Like, go and turn on my camera on my phone whenever you want, hackers.
Yeah. At this point, yeah, we live in this world. Like, I don't do that much interesting things.
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to do a lot more interesting
things. Like when you're probably hacking into my phone or my computer, I'm probably not doing anything terribly interesting.
Yeah, you're going to see me just on the computer.
Yeah.
Wow, good for you, man.
Yeah.
So I have a kind of a strange question, kind of.
Okay.
But I want you to just to imagine that, like, an evil hypnotist.
Okay.
Not me. An evil hypnotist that went in and to every single person that you've interacted with.
Yeah.
He went and hypnotized them all.
Yeah.
To believe that you didn't exist.
Yeah.
Ever.
Okay.
And now you have one opportunity to do something to hopefully remind everyone who you are. What would you do?
I would probably do it through music. I would probably record a new album and perform it and write my heart out in terms of like what it was, because like that's the least abstract version of who I am, if that makes sense. Like it's I'm very capable of relaying my personality, my beliefs, and what I've gone through what I write and how I perform it. And I think that would be the way that a lot of people know me originally, and a lot of people can easily interact with me over it. I think that would be the way that I would do it.
Nice. I like it. I should have wrote my guest down.
That's what you thought it would be?
No. Well, in a sense, maybe not.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm just saying that would be my guess.
That's true.
Never really know.
That's true.
That's why you should always, like, if you ever, like, watch a mentalist or performance mind reader, because no one can actually read minds, you know, to make sure that they always have something written beforehand.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, yeah. just change it afterwards.
Right.
But yeah, okay. Sorry, excuse me. Been dealing with spring coming in, back into effect here. That's why I like these. I used to use headsets.
Yep.
And then you can't get away from the mic.
Yep.
Sorry.
All good. All good.
And it's all staying in, but whatever. Okay. If you could maybe leave us with maybe 3, 5, I don't know, things that you have found. Maybe it's in your music, maybe it's in carpentry, but lessons that you've learned in those areas, maybe it's in the radio, anything that you found apply to life in general.
You have to always be willing to have a conversation. Always. No matter what the situation is. There's been times where I've walked away from a potential interaction and I come back and I think I could have gained something from that, or I could have learned something from that, or I could have met somebody from that that changed my, as much as people want to be an introvert, I think the biggest thing is getting over that hump and being able to interact with people. Yeah.
Okay.
Human interaction, I think, is like the only way to growth, personal growth.
I like it.
Because I think you can learn a lot of things from reading books and looking at the internet and sitting in your room and doing whatever you're doing and practicing your craft, I should say. But in reality, you have to see how you stack up against the next person. Not saying that like that's value, but if you can't defend who you are as a person or express who you are as a person, then you need to learn, if that makes sense.
For sure. Totally.
Always look at things in the long term. That's the one thing that I wish I could like drill into everybody's heads in terms of like their decision making, in terms of who they support, how they support. Like, this might seem like a good idea right now, and maybe through the lens of the short term, it is a good idea, But if you're not considering how it's going to affect you down the road and where you may or may not be, again, it ties back to that interaction thing. You need to know that, like, you don't exist at just this time. Like, I don't know.
No, I know what you mean. There's a lot more to just right now.
Yeah. And what you're doing right now is adding up to what you're going to be in the future. Exactly. And everything that you've done in the past is adding up to where you are right now.
You get to determine who you are.
Exactly.
So you have to really think about the end, the end result.
Really. Right.
You know, sorry. Any
other ones? And I don't know, like another one. I would never sit down in a feeling of complacency. Like, we've talked about how, oh, I feel like I'm the best. Mm-hmm. But if you feel like you've mastered something, then you need to master something else. Because I feel like so many people get to a point in their life where they're like, I'm really good at what I do and I make good money at it and I'm comfortable. And that's like a real dangerous spot long term. Like, that's how somebody withers and dies, like, philosophically. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think if you, like, being able to, like, self-engage yourself and saying, like, am I being objectively real with myself is, I don't know, a huge thing. And part of me, like, if ever I feel like I'm saying or doing the wrong thing, then I have to think about that. And why do I think that? I don't know. That's like a real abstract idea, but like,
just think about your actions more.
And, right. And, you know, and why are you deciding that this is it?
That's hard.
Cause
to
it's
do.
Never it. Cause if like, imagine if you got to the point where like, I'm good with where I'm at and I don't have to do anything to get any better or increase my level of living. But we're in an age where, like, if we're alive, they're saying if we're alive in the next 40 years, we're probably going to be alive for the next 100, just the way that, like, medical science is going. So imagine, like, you're 30 and you're like, I'm topped out, and then you're alive for another 100 years just doing the exact same thing. Like, what kind of person do you be, you know what I mean?
Like, exactly.
Always try to learn something new. Always try to build your base.
Yeah.
Like, who you are, create a better and stronger foundation. Yeah.
I think that's partially in, like, you always hear about these kids that become super famous, right?
Yeah.
And they're, like, so good at what they do.
Yeah.
At such a young age.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, once you pass that age,
yeah,
and you're not there, I think that's almost like an inverse effect where it's like, okay, it's too late.
Yeah.
Too old now.
Yeah. But you're never too old. And, like, I listen to a lot of Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah.
He's an entrepreneur. He's awesome, yeah. And I think I'm sure I've like commented on you posting some of his videos, but his biggest thing is like, you got to have patience and you got to realize like, you've got time. Like, you might be 30, you might be 40, but it's never too late to like learn something new, excel at something new. And that's something that I've really like taken to heart and turned around in my head and realized like, yeah, for a while there, I really felt the pressure of death and when it was coming, but I'm not going to die anytime soon and I'm healthy and there's things that I'm interested in. And I got to take advantage of that. I can't just be like, I got to do this one thing and get so good at it because that's the only thing I can do before I die. Because you can do millions of things. You can see millions of things. You can learn millions of things. And I think that should be the goal all the time, is that keeping your eye on the possibilities and not the end result.
Right, and continuing to grow.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah, man. Yeah, I haven't watched all of his stuff, but
yeah.
I probably will eventually.
He's somebody that I put on every Monday morning on podcasts, and I just like listen to all of his podcasts and the things that he's put up, because now he's like getting to the point where he's realizing that like Instagram and all those things that he does use, and I think that we're all using at the same time too. It, as much as it's like really good interaction on like a minute level, he's now like has his team like building all those things into podcasts so that like the at least the audio of it is available, like, right. Even if it's a 2-minute discussion, he puts it up, and so now I can go into his podcast profile and listen to like 2 hours of stuff while I'm doing my Monday morning routine. Like that's nice. That's what's so nice about it. So
what is your Monday morning routine?
It used to be that I would try to tackle a lot of my like mundane book work and the invoicing and the quoting and, you know, answering emails. And the more and more I've read, you got to make time for the big ideas. So recently now, I usually try to get up around 7 because I stay up way too late, I realize. I drink pretty much a pot of coffee. Some Mondays, if I feel antsy, I get out of the house and I go buy a cup of coffee. Not because I need to or the coffee I make at home is bad. It's that like I do my best thinking when I'm driving around and I'm not talking to anybody. And like I don't know. To some people, I think it like they're like, well, why would you go get a cup of coffee? Well, because that 20 minutes is like a good thinking period. And so then not like that lets me get down to like I try to spend those Monday mornings. I recently got into like scrapbooking, not scrapbooking in terms of like, oh, I'm trying to like, but going through magazines and printing off like ideas that I've seen on the internet or that, you know, copying passages out of books that I've read and kind of creating like a notebook of things that inspire me, whether they're carpentry involved, whether they're design ideas, whether they're entrepreneurship, whether they're music related. And I try to spend my Monday mornings cultivating creative ideas and seeing where they fit into my long-term plans and then spending a bit of time working on that. So I basically just I sit around in my office or my couch and kind of like go through these different things and turn things over my head and try to spend that time alone.
I like it.
Yeah,
that's
I like yeah. Mondays. That's like my like again, that's something that I've realized is that like Monday's the most important day of the week.
For sure.
You have to like you even if it's not the starting day of your week and Sunday's like the considered day of the beginning of your week, Monday sets the tone for how you're going to interact with the rest of the week and how you're going to feel about it, how you're going to deal with it, how you're going to manage problems that come up in the way and like being proactive about things.
Right. For sure.
Yeah.
So do you have another routine that you do on like a daily basis?
Yeah. My biggest thing is like, obviously, Wednesday nights, I always do the radio show 9 to 10:30 as much as I possibly can. There might be days where I can't make that, but that's like that's my routine there. And over the last couple of years, one of my big focuses has been like trying to get to the gym and creating a habit of that. And that goes back to, again, creating healthy existing habits. And I've read a lot of books about just that topic, like how our brains wired to make habits. So routines are a collection of habits. And so recently, and I've fallen off in the fall of last year, I'm trying to get to the gym, you know, 3-4 times a week.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday morning at like specific times so that like I stop my day from like getting into the late evening. Not to say that I don't like working into the evening, but I realize that I need to get up and get out of the house or get out of where I'm doing it like around 5:36 and make a conscious effort to do something that's, you know, that.
Yeah. Well, for sure.
But other than that, I mean, lately, and I realize this is like counterintuitive, but my day life has been like so chaotic in terms of like dealing with phone calls and dealing with clients that we're talking about kind of trying to create schedules. And it's something I want to do, but we're kind of in a transitionary period in terms of how my company's growing, and I'm having a hard time anchoring everything to where it should be in the week. So that's the one thing that I'm trying to do right now is that like I'm going to build that habit of going to the gym on those days at that time, and hopefully every day, like I would like to be there every day of the week, because that again creates like a stable position in the day that everything has to revolve around, and then I can build out from there.
Right.
And try to like maintain a rigorous routine hopefully one day down the road. But
for sure.
Yeah.
And that's obviously you got to get better at it.
Yeah.
It's not like you can just go full force into it and expect you to be able to sustain it without going a little bit crazy.
Yeah, that's the endurance thing, is like your what do you call it? Your ability to continue doing something is an endurance thing. Like you can't expect it like, oh, I'm going to start making this routine now and I'm going to stick to it for the next week and it's going to be great and everything's going to work as proper, because you're going to get tired of trying to stick to, you know, a very rigid structure that you're not used to or that you could be used to. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
You've got to work your way into it and become good at following the structure you're trying to maintain, I guess.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely gets very difficult.
Yeah.
I did 200 days in a row.
Yeah.
Of making a video every day.
Which is insane. Like, and how do you feel at the end of that?
Like, it was nuts, man. But, I mean, I guess I fell behind, but I always made a new one.
Yeah.
Like, filmed a new one every day.
Yeah.
And then eventually caught up with editing.
Yeah.
But it was, I definitely...
Because they're not eventually. Even short videos. They're like the half hour, 45 minute ones, some of them, right?
Well, I guess my live shows, but I don't do much editing for those.
Okay.
For the episodes, they're like 10 minutes long sometimes.
They felt long. Not that I'm saying like I was, you know what I'm saying? Like watching them is that I felt like I was getting a lot of experience out of it. So I think maybe I'm getting mixed up and saying like, you know.
There was some long ones.
But like that's crazy that like filming it, because that's a lot of film.
Yeah.
You're doing a lot of things all over the course of the day. Then organizing that into something that's cohesive is insane to me.
Right. But I think I figured it out now. Because, you know, when I put myself on that everyday schedule, then I started producing things that maybe definitely weren't the right quality that I was looking for.
Yeah.
Because now I'm just like, okay, I have to get something out there.
Yeah.
I didn't have much time today. Well, I guess this will do.
Yeah.
So now I'm more conscious of the quality control aspect, and I know what parts of it worked.
I think that's a good idea and exercise to go through, even if it's not the right thing long term. Like my friend Jessica Reimer, she's a writer and she freelances a lot, and she's got her own blog. And I once asked, like, she was doing this month long thing where she's going to write a blog every day of the month for 30 days. And I asked her, I was like, what's the reason for that? And she's just like, just to get a baseline. And she doesn't blog that much or that interval anymore, but it gets you prepared for the work, right? Like, I think that's what you're getting at. Like, even though you didn't stick to that rigid schedule, you now have 200 days of experience to spread into your next level of media and I don't know.
For sure. And I think taking a break from it was actually beneficial, because there was no way when I was in the thick of it that I could step back and just analyze things.
Yeah.
Because it's just constant.
There's no time to do that, right? There's no time to objectively think about what you're doing, because you're like, I have a deadline, I have to get it done.
Yeah.
Just get it out. And again, maybe the quality's not as great as it could be. And I think that's a lot of things with creative people, is that quality is the utmost importance, because we want to present our best selves to our audience.
For sure.
But at some point you have to realize you kind of maybe have to learn where you have to let go.
Right.
And that's maybe, I don't know.
I think creating quantity leads to creating quality.
That's a very good point.
Because if you if you don't create that much, but it's higher quality.
Yeah.
Then I don't think you can get as far as, you know, maybe, I don't know how I'm trying. I'm kind of not explaining it well.
That's a concept that I've found interesting. And again, going back to rap music, there's a time in hip hop and underground rap music after the early 2000s where everybody was doing mixtapes, EPs, albums. Like any artist that's still surviving from that era was just putting out quantities of stuff as much as they could do. Like I'd record an album, it's out. Like I'm not waiting for it. Like I'm not mastering it, I'm not mixing it, I'm not sitting on it. It's out. And I think now we're getting to the point where release dates are coming back and ideas are coming back, where we have to stick to a structure of like, here's a project, here's an art piece, here it is, and I've thought about it and I've worked it out and I've made sure it's the best possible thing. But I don't think those that kind of attitude came from anywhere but like that mad rush to smash out quantity. And I think you're right in that, like, now that we've gone through that phase of like, how do we turn over so quickly? How do we now use that same experience to make even better stuff?
For sure.
I think that's definitely a valid like construction and like advancement of that idea.
I like it.
Yeah. Cause like, it's again, carpentry is the same thing as like, you know, realistically, I could make more money if I could bang out 10 projects a day, small projects, right? But if I'm doing the same thing over and over and over again, I'm only getting good at those things. So, but I'm still developing a baseline for managing my time wisely, right?
Exactly.
So now I can expand that idea to like, okay, I'm going to build a $2,500 piece of furniture. And, but before I was only making $50 ones, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
But I need those skills to get to that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think definitely it was the right play.
Yeah.
And today is actually officially day one of season two of the vlog and the podcast.
Awesome.
So now I'm going full force in both.
Okay.
And just, yeah.
Going That's crazy. Good. That's awesome. It, congrats.
So you probably won't see me outside doing anything but magic.
Yeah.
Otherwise I'll be here.
Do you keep pretty busy? Like is there seasons to what you do or?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Like December, Christmas season, and then June, May for
grads
for,
and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah. That's pretty much
nice.
It's hard to fill the days in between, like the winter months and the summer months.
Yeah.
It's mainly music that takes over
okay.
in all the different places. So
yeah,
it's definitely a harder sell to say, hey, you should hire a hypnotist.
Yeah.
Than say a band who's going to bring tons of people into and
yeah.
then they're all going to drink and then,
yeah.
you know, the bar or venue makes money on alcohol.
Yeah.
Cause no one goes to a magic show to get hammered.
No, so. Cause it could get pretty embarrassing. Right.
Yeah. And then the magician's going to hate it cause yeah. no one's paying attention, but
yeah.
But yeah, I just switched to the phone.
Okay.
I guess I don't care. I'm gonna just announce it anyways.
So yeah.
Apparently my cameras, even though they have extra battery on them, they should last 2 hours.
Yeah.
For some reason they're both done. Actually, you know what? We're almost at a 2 hour mark.
Wow. That went by fast.
Yeah.
That was a good conversation.
Jeez. That's crazy. So yeah. I guess those watching the video. Yeah, that's why we're on the cell phone now.
Yep.
But, yeah, Chris, maybe just, leave us with how people can find you.
I guess the best way to find me specifically is probably through my Instagram and Facebook. A lot of the work I do is through chapter.thrive and legion.construction. On Instagram. That should be pretty easy to find. That's kind of my anchor in terms of how I like present myself to the world. Getting more into the third verse stuff with our radio stuff is third.verse.cfcr. If you ever want to find anything pretty much on any social media, just search that. Getting more into YouTube video making.
Yeah.
If you have any questions, if you ever want to talk about anything, I'm happy to definitely shoot the shit, excuse my language, have a coffee, discuss what you're doing. Like, I like spreading ideas. I like helping with ideas. I like giving my opinion if you want it. Not saying that that's the thing, but you know what I mean? Like, I like interacting because not only am I giving you part of me, but I'm also learning from you. And the more people I learn from, the better I get good at it, And networking, that's my biggest thing, is just meeting new people, having more conversations and learning from them. So Awesome. I'm open. I'm an open book as much as I possibly can be.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Chris, for coming out here.
Thank you.
I've learned a lot.
Thank you.
And yeah, thanks for everyone tuning in, whether it's on video or audio format.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
And all the information, all your links are going to be linked up in the show notes on my website.
Okay.
So yeah, it'll be linked up, and I'll add a little soundbite at the end to indicate exactly what episode number this is. Cause
awesome.
There's I have a few in the bank.
Yeah.
And then another one later today, and
yeah,
four more after that.
Wow.
Just in this week, but
yeah,
just hoping to get ahead.
Yeah.
You know, so I have content
to start laying out. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
But I'm almost thinking I should just release these the same day they happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something to think about.
Yeah, that's possible too.
But anyways, yeah, thank you very much, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that. This has been a lot of fun. Awesome. I really appreciate asking me to come on here.
For sure, man. Anytime. Let's do it again soon.
I would love to. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That was episode number 52. I hope you enjoyed this episode just as much as I enjoyed facilitating it and learning from Chris. It was just a pleasure to have him on here, and thank you so much for your time and attention. If you haven't already, please subscribe on iTunes, or as they now rebranded to Apple Podcasts, or on your favorite podcasting platform. We're there, except for Spotify. I'm working on that. We'll get on Spotify shortly. I think I have to switch service providers in order to get the podcast onto Spotify. So anyways, that's besides the point. Thank you again for tuning in. Please like and share with somebody that you feel would learn something from this episode. And remember, go out there every single day and work as hard as you can towards your goals.